welcome to the outreach program sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to upgrade license status. The program tonight will be an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for the general class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m., 2300 Zulu, each Tuesday, and at 7 p.m., 2300 Zulu, each Sunday evening. That's East Coast time. Letting it drop. For those that are already licensed and wish either a refresher course or just would like to listen, please connect to our SCARS server at either Echolink node number 96140, IRLP node 9614, or All-Star node AST27404. For those who are interested, please contact Mike KD0CDQ via email, and I will do the email one time phonetically. It is Victor Oscar India Papa at Sierra Charlie Alpha Romeo Sierra Victor Oscar India Papa at .com. If you wish to enroll in the class or be given instructions as to the study material required, with this manner you will be able to connect into the course. The material being presented is formatted from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in the presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made, and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at VOIP at scarsvoip.com, letting it drop. You know, it should be mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing session on this server, please drop us an email at VOIP at SCARS, SCARS VOIP.com. This session this evening will be recorded and posted on our website, and the website is www.scarsvoip, that's SCARSVOIP.com. One more drop to be sure. Please note that all class members and instructors, it's extremely important that we all stay on the same page during these classes. The only questionable and copies thereof that should be used when participating in this class should be the one found posted on our website. Publications from other sources may or may not be current and should not be used during our sessions. Do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? Okay, at this point, we will begin. I will be throwing it over to NO70 George up in Maryland. So he will pick it up from here. George, take it away. Over.
KD0CDQ and the South Cars General Class Test. This preparation group, study group, this is George NO70 in Nottingham, Maryland, officially known as the Forest. And I want to welcome each and every one of you here as you continue your preparation or review for the General Class Amateur Radio License. Now, may I also add to what Michael was saying that your instructors have chosen, to the best of their ability, representative sample questions, which means there will probably be similar variants of these questions also available in the pool of hundreds of questions that are authorized. By studying this one, hopefully you'll know the answer to several more. However, it will still be in your best interest to dig in and spend additional time studying as many of the questions as you can, and also reviewing what you have learned from our representative questions each night on Sunday and Tuesday nights resetting. So the class is running on Sunday and Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. All right, with that, we're going to continue our review It was my pleasure, and I'm sure Chief's pleasure as well, to be with you this past Sunday evening. And now we are continuing what he and I were covering on this Tuesday evening. We're looking at category G4B in the question poll, dealing with test and monitoring equipment. So under category G4B, let's look at question G4B02, Golf 4 Baker 02. Now, these are all multiple choice questions. I'm going to ask you the question and then give you the four possible choices for you to select from. And I hope that you will come back in between each question when invited to give us tonight, to give us your guess, also just to check in, let us know that you're there. Let me reset. One other thought, too, is that keep in mind that memorizing A, B, C, or D letters would not help you at all. These questions are rearranged sometimes even within the same testing session between test students or testees. So you want to be sure and take a look at the correct answer and not the A, B, C, or D. Resetting. G4B02, the question is, which of the following is an advantage of an oscilloscope versus a digital voltmeter? Which of the following is an advantage of an oscilloscope versus a digital voltmeter? A choice might be an oscilloscope uses less power, or complex impedances can be easily measured, or input impedance is much lower, or complex waveforms can be measured. So I'd like to invite anyone who would like to give their answer, or just to let us know that you're checking in for the class tonight, to please call now for Mike to recognize you. Please call KDZ or CDQ. This is NO70, over.
Six, Victor.
Go ahead, Gordon.
Well, thank you, Mike, and thank you, George. KY6V here. I didn't necessarily want to jump in and steal somebody else answering that question, so I won't. But I wanted to amplify, George, for just a moment on what you were saying here before we got into the question. If everybody has been staying true to the cause and studying the class material prior to each class, by the time you finish the class this evening, you will have gone through approximately 240 questions. Yeah, I think that's right, 240. So what I'm leading up to here, this is a good point for people to start getting familiar with the practice tests that are available, and you will find on our study guide material for the course a recommended site that you can go to and pull up the practice exam, which will give you a feeling of what the exam's going to look like. Start answering the questions. Nobody will know how many you get right or how many get wrong, but you will. And you can concentrate on those that are maybe still a little bit out of reach for you. That was my comment, if you don't mind, George. KY6V, back to you.
Well, thank you, Gordon, for reminding us of the availability of the practice tests. Yes, you want to be sure that you feel comfortable when showing up to take these tests, and that will help you get a better score. And, you know, who knows, if it comes down to one question either way, you will have done yourself a favor. So, very good. All right, so the question G4B02, which of the following is an advantage of an oscilloscope versus a digital voltmeter? Let me invite anyone who would have their preferred answer to speak up now. Please call now. This is N070. Over. Well, nothing heard. All right. The answer to that one is complex waveforms can be measured. That is an advantage of an oscilloscope versus a digital voltmeter. If let's think about what each of those test instruments looks like to help you understand how to get to the answer. An oscilloscope will have a little display that draws the waveforms on that display. A digital voltmeter has a needle that swings back and forth according to the voltage being measured. It doesn't show all the complexity of what is contained within a waveform. So because the oscilloscope can show more than just a simple needle swing, then an oscilloscope can measure complex waveforms. Now, digital voltmeters are still very useful, very handy. They are useful for testing components before you put them into a circuit. Make sure that they are within the tolerance of their values. In terms of resistance or capacitance, they're good for measuring voltage and so forth. But the complex waveforms that the oscilloscope would be your tool of choice. Let me reset and we'll move to the next question. Our next question is G4B11, Golf 4 Bravo 11. The question is, which of the following must be connected to an antenna analyzer when the analyzer is being used for SWR measurements? SWR stands for standing wave ratio. That is a measurement of how much energy is being reflected back into the transmitter instead of being radiated out by the antenna for propagation and, you know, into the propagation path. So SWR is standing wave ratio. And we want to know which of the three following things must be connected to an antenna analyzer being used for SWR measurements. Would it be a receiver, or would it be a transmitter, or would it be the antenna and feed line that would need to be connected to the analyzer? That's the question. Let me pause for anyone who would like to address the answer. Go ahead. All right, the answer to that one is going to be antenna and feed line. They also have the choice. All these choices are correct. Well, if you're using an antenna analyzer and looking for SWR measurements, then receiver is not going to help you because it's not transmitting. Transmitter is going to, of course, put energy into the antenna and the feed line, but the antenna and feed line itself would have to be connected to the antenna analyzer for you to measure the SWR. So that means that the fourth answer, all these sources are correct, would be an incorrect choice because the receiver being connected won't help you with that. All right, so that's Golf 4 Bravo 11. Let me move on to the next question. It is Golf 4 Charlie 03. Golf 4 Charlie 03 is asking the following question. What sound is heard from an audio device or telephone if there is interference from a nearby single sideband phone transmitter? What sound is heard from an audio device or telephone if there is interference from a nearby single sideband phone transmitter? Your choices are a steady hum whenever the transmitter is on the air, on and off humming or clicking, distorted speech, or clearly audible speech. So which of those four choices do you think might be the correct answer? Would love to hear some responses. Please call Michael, KD0CDQ, is our net control. Please call now if you'd like to give us your estimate. This is N070.
Six, Victor.
Go ahead, Gordon.
Thanks, guys. I'm just in a silly mood. If it sounds like Donald Duck, that's what it is, George. KY6V, over.
Thank you, Gordon. I'd have to agree, which means distorted speech would be the answer. Yes. Well, let's take a look at it. A steady hum whenever the transmitter is on the air. Well, single sideband is going to be a waveform that varies according to the speech being transmitted, what we might call the intelligence being transmitted. So it's not going to be steady. So that means I might kind of put the first answer aside to before making a final decision. The other on and off humming or clicking. Well, on and off, like that would tend to be maybe Morse code, more so because you've got the steady on off of a Morse code character with each of its components of the word being transmitted, the letter. Distorted speech was the correct answer. Clearly audible speech in terms of a sideband phone transmitter, hitting an audio device or telephone, usually there's interference. So that means interference. So in choosing between, therefore, the first and the third answer, a steady hum or distorted speech, like Gordon says, you're going to have Donald Duck and not a steady hum. So the answer would be distorted speech. Any questions on that question, please call now. This is NO70. Okay, I guess maybe, hopefully we made that question plainer than Donald Duck. All right. You are listening to the South Cars General Class License Preparation and Review course being presented for your convenience by the South Cars VOIP conference and organization here. We want to welcome you and encourage you in your studies as you prepare for your taking the test or for your review of the test. Now, I mentioned last week that motivation can be very difficult when we're not in the classroom and when we only see you twice a week. So we're counting on you to motivate yourself, but think of how good you will feel when you complete the review, and if you take the test, even whether you pass or fail it the first time, you will have made the effort and probably wind up taking the test again just to pass it because you know you're that close to it. Think how good you would feel by having made the effort you are on studies. So that's my motivational speech for the time being, and welcome again to the South Cars General Class Preparation Course. We're going to question Golf 4 Charlie 05, G4C 05. The question is, what might be the problem if you receive an RF burn when touching your equipment while transmitting on an HF band, assuming the equipment is connected to a ground rod? Your choices are a flat braid rather than round wire has been used for the ground wire, which is, might give you an RF burn. Well, the second choice, insulated wire has been used for the ground wire. Third, the ground wire is resonant, R-E-S-O-N-A-N-T. Or fourth, the ground wire has high impedance on that frequency. Let me reset. Now, for those of you who might say RF burn or being confused about what an RF burn is, well, it's worse than a normal burn. They hurt badly, so they're not pleasant things to have. If you can avoid them, please do so. And it's good that nowadays we have better training and can avoid them a lot more. But RF burns are nasty little things, and they take a while to heal. So just want you to know what an RF burn is. The radio frequency energy travels along the conductor toward the outside, and then it travels along your skin, and it makes a mess. So the answer to Golf 405 is the ground wire has high impedance on that frequency. That's answered the fourth answer. In looking at the choices, flat braid rather than round wire has been used for the ground wire. You're still getting RF going along the wire. insulated wire has been used for the ground wire. Well, not necessarily the best choice. Too many insulated wire, how could you get heartburn? The ground rod is resonant. If you're touching the equipment, the ground rod is resonant. That doesn't make as much sense as the ground wire having a higher impedance on that frequency. And if you present a lower impedance, meaning less opposition to the RF flow, it's going to hit for you instead of the ground wire. So that's where you would get the burn. That is the fourth answer then for G405 resetting. All right, I have two more questions, and then Chief W4FJ is going to proceed with some additional questions for you tonight, and we're moving right along. G4 is C07. Why should soldered joints not be used with the wires that connect the base of a tower to a system of ground rods? Now, let's think about that. You've got a tower, you have the base of a tower, you have ground rods, a system of them extending out around the base of a tower, and you have to connect the wires, you know, to the base of the tower that for the ground rods. All right, so that's what this is asking about if you have that kind of antenna farm. So why should soldered joints not be used when you join those wires to the base of a tower? Your choices are the resistance of solder is too high, or solder flux will prevent a low conductivity connection, or solder has too high a dielectric constant to provide adequate lightning protection, or a soldered joint will likely be destroyed by the heat of a lightning stroke. I'd like to invite any RF or propagation or anyone with a good knowledge of RF energy here, please come back and say hello to us, check in, and let us know your choice. And KD0CDQ is net control. Call him. We're here. This is N070. Over. Well, nothing heard. So the answer here is a soldered joint will likely be destroyed by the heat of a lightning stroke. Okay. And now think about the fact that when you solder something, you use a soldering iron. The soldering iron heats the solder up to a melting point. If you, instead of soldering a joint, use some type of mechanical connection that's very strong and stable, then it's going to stay there, but a soldered point will melt at the melting point of the solder itself. Therefore, the soldered joint would likely be destroyed by the heat of a lightning stroke. And the heat of a lightning stroke, I wish I did remember what the estimated temperature of a lightning strike is. I know there's a range for it, but as you well know, the heat of a lightning stroke is very significant. So, any thoughts, comments on G40C07 before I proceed? Please call now, N070.
Name, Charlie Bravo.
George, go right ahead. KW4LCB, go right ahead, George.
Well, sir, in the past, you know, I've stuck up a tower or two and about tried every type of grounding system that can you think of there. And like George mentioned there, the heating of a lightning strike there, them killywinkles that causes things to fry inside and outside also. And you know, if it your grounding rod is disconnected through the strike, that leads to coax. And then next thing you know, you've got a rig that's done burned up too. So you know, I do believe in grounding systems, and as the answer mentioned there, solder will desolderize, and it sure doesn't take a whole lot to get it done. So what can I say? These old screw clamps there, you know, works pretty well for me so far. Sounds like my little youngin is hollering in the background. KW4LEAD, my Charlie Bravo back to net control.
Thank you, George, for those comments. We will continue. I believe the chief is going to jump in. Am I right? Over.
Actually, Michael, I have one more question before we do that. And I also have a comment, if I may, about something George, KW4LCB, just said that I think it's worth highlighting over. Well, I saw Kiev. I think you were probably saying yes. Well, you know, George, KW4LCB, mentioned about the energy traveling along the coax. And I mentioned earlier about RF burns. There's something with RF called skin effect. Now, this may come up with another question that's not on the question selections for tonight. However, skin effect means that RF tends to travel along the outer edges of a conductor like the coax, and then that focuses more heat on a smaller part of the conductor, and that can also can create some heating problems. Now I'm going to play teacher here, like my boss Kathy K6SUN, and I'm going to pull in quickly an extra credit. KY6B, can you give a brief description of a coax fire from your radio and TV broadcasting experience? I know I'm putting you on the spot and going off of the script here, but I think George, KW4LCB, made a very good point regarding this question. Are you willing, Gordon? And if you think it's out of context, I will take that and and go with that. But the invitation is open. KY6B, NO70, over.
Well, I'll get even with you, George. Gordon here at KY6B. Well, I'll play with it. The first comment I'll make is stay out of the way of it, number one, if you can. And you best do that. Number two, I was smiling at your comment, George South, on desolderizing. Is that synonymous to melting? I'm going to interject something here, George, that it's not in the in the scope of what we're discussing that much, I suppose, or I don't think it's in any of the questions. But it is said by experts that lightning will not go around in circles. Okay, now I want you to think about that. And it is further said that if you take your coax, like particularly on the end that's starting to go into your shack, it's come down the tower and looped over to you, to your shack window, or however you're getting that in, you put a couple of loops in that coax, and then feed it through into the operating section. Food for thought. Now, the only other comment I've got, say you've got me started here, George. Let me buy a nickel. Going back to RF burns, let me tell you that George is absolutely correct. It hurts. And it stays sore for quite a while. And what it is a burning of your skin. Okay? The RF energy is actually burning your skin. All right. Now, when that happens, it produces a smell. And besides the hurt and the pain and the surprise and everything that goes along when this happens, it is a smell that you will never forget. NO70 from KY6V. Over.
KY6V in the South Cars, the General Class Preparation Course, NO70. Thank you, Gordon. Yes, indeed. Now, class, I'm going to issue an invitation for you to try to catch Gordon outside of class sometime and ask him to tell you the story about the inside of a coax cable catching fire from a lightning stroke. called him on the South Cars conference here outside class, if that's a good learning experience, which a learning experience from another ham operator is called using your Elmer. Your Elmer is a person you look to help you through your journey and improving your skills as a radio operator. Elmers are invaluable and precious. So, and there are some good Elmers on this conference. All right, let me reset. Moving on to my last question. We're going to section Golf 4 Delta, G4D. Speech processors, S meters, and sideband operation near band edges. Of course, no, we cannot transmit outside our assigned bands. And you've got sideband operation. If you're near the end of a band and you choose the wrong sideband, you may get a pink ticket waddling in the front door. I think heard that phrase used last week. Not good. So let's start this off with question G4D, as in Delta, Z03. G4D03. The question is, which of the following can be the result of an incorrectly adjusted speech processor? Which of the following four choices can be the result of an incorrectly adjusted speech processor? Your first choice is distorted speech. Your second choice is splatter. Your third choice is excessive background pickup. And your fourth choice is all of those choices can be the result of an incorrectly adjusted speech processor. Let me open it up for anyone to provide their opinion of the answer. Call now. This is NO70. Well, nothing heard. The answer is all three of those can be the result of an incorrectly adjusted speech processor. The first is distorted speech. Well, that would make a lot of sense. If it's incorrectly adjusted, and it is a speech processor, then the speech is probably going to be distorted because it's incorrectly adjusted. Splatter, well, if the speech processor is incorrectly adjusted, then it's going to be putting in a lot of intelligence and probably splattering your RF signal around the band. Not good. And also, if the speech processor is incorrectly adjusted, it could pick up excessive background noise. Thereby excessive background pickup. So all three of those choices would be correct, and that would be for question G4D03. So this is the South Cars General Class Review Course or Preparation Course. With that, that has completed my set of questions for this evening. Chief W4RFJ, who is a former Navy chief, and he is an engineer, and he knows his stuff on this. He is going to be your Elmer for the last half of tonight's class. Please stay tuned. Keep listening if you're on the podcast. Well worth your time. I hardly endorse him. He is one of my trusted Elmers, and I'll let it go at that. So let me turn it back to Michael as our net control station, and he then will pick it up with W4FJ for the remainder of the questions tonight for there. KD0CDQ, Michael, thank you for the privilege of being one of the instructors this evening. KD0CDQ, NO70. Over.
Thank you so much, George, NO70. We appreciate your very exact and very clear answers to these questions. Very enjoyable, very enjoyable. Now we're switching it over. I think we're going to Pennsylvania. We're going to W4RFJ. We're going to the chief, and the chief will take the question pool from here. Go right ahead, chief. We're all ears. Over. KD0CDQ.
KD0CDQ and net. This is W4RFJ. My next question is Golf 4 Delta 05. Golf 4 D as in Delta, 05. How does a signal that reads 20 dB over S9 compare to one that reads S9 on a receiver, assuming a properly calibrated S meter? Let's see, the answers that I have ahead of me here is it is 10 times less powerful. Number two, it is 20 times less powerful. The third option is it is 20 times more powerful. And last but not least, it is 100 times more powerful. Let's see if we can get somebody to jump in and take a stab at this question. This is W4RFJ, taking anybody that would like to take a stab. I think we need a wake-up call. What do you think, Mike?
I don't know. I'm busy on this end. I'm listening to you with my ears, and I'm looking at my phone. We got an Amber Alert, another 13-year-old child that's missing. So I'm pretty busy right here. Anybody want to give a shot at this? Come on. Let's give a shot at this question. Anybody? Over? Well, I think we got a lot of shy folks on here tonight. So maybe, Chief, you got to surprise us with the answer. Over.
Okay, Mike. We can do that. Before we get to the answer, let's look at a couple of defining rules when you're talking about dB or gain as it's describing in this question. When you're talking about dB, you can actually use it for gain or attenuation. We're looking at gain because it's 20 dB over S9. Well, first of all, let me add, I don't think I've ever seen a properly calibrated S meter. So an S9 signal is pretty much relative. But two guidelines that I use when trying to figure out what the gain or attenuation is, every 3 dB doubles or cuts in half. If it's gain, it doubles. If it's attenuation, it cuts it in half for every 3 dB. Every 10 dB is 10 times as great or 10 times as less. So it's multiplied by 10 if you're gaining, and it's divided by 10 if you're attenuating. Let me grab a nickel. So if we look at this, we have a signal that's S9, and we have another signal that's 20 dB over S9. So if we were looking at how they would compare, well, 20 dB would be times 10 twice. So in this case, 10 times 10 is 100. So the answer is D. It is 100 times more powerful with a signal 20 dB over S9 than the signal that reads S9. Anybody have any comments, changes, and or deletions, or you want to set the chief straight, please call W4RFJ.
N070.
Go right ahead, N070.
So is 10 times 10 the same as 10 squared? N070.
Well, George, you being a mathematician, I don't think I have to explain that. 10 times 10 is 10 squared, yes.
Okay. I think that's something to remember when hitting the test. Okay. Thank you, Chief. Appreciate it. N070.
Okay. Anybody else want to take a stab at a comment, or should I move on to the next? Mike, you tell me what you want me to do. Okay. I think I'll move on to the next question then, being as Mike is probably paying attention to those Amber Alerts. The next question on my docket is Golf 4 Delta 08. Golf 4 Delta 08. Over.
Go right ahead.
All righty. What frequency range is occupied by a 3 kilohertz lower sideband signal when the displayed carrier frequency is set to 7.178 megahertz? The options are 7.178 to 7.181 megahertz. Second option, 7.178 to 7.184 megahertz. Or 7.175 to 7.178 megahertz. And last but not least, 7.1765 to 7.1795 megahertz. All right, let's get some check-ins here. Who's got the answer to this one? What frequency range is occupied by a 3 kilohertz lower sideband signal when the displayed carrier frequency is set to 7.178? Please call. This is W4RFJ. Boy, I don't know. I don't think there's anybody here. Is there anybody here, Mike?
They're just being coy. They're just trying to learn. I don't know if anybody's there either, to tell you the truth. But we'll go at it anyway. We'll go at it anyway, because someone will review this sometime in the future, I am sure. Over.
Okay. Well, it's pretty much, if you do the math, 7.178 is the center frequency. And if it's lower sideband, you're going to subtract the 3 kilohertz, which would be 0.003 megahertz from your center frequency, and that would give you the answer of C, 7.175 to 7.178 megahertz. All right, any comments, please call. This is W4RFJ. All right, guess we don't have any answers on or any comments on that one. And I just dropped a can of cream soda. It's not open, but I'm going to have to let it sit for a while. All right, this is W4RFJ. The next question I have is Golf 4 Echo 04. Golf 4 Echo 04. Why is it best not to draw the DC power for a 100-watt HF transceiver from a vehicle's auxiliary power socket? The answers are, the socket is not wired with an RF-shielded power cable. Second option, the socket's wiring may be inadequate for the current drawn by the transceiver. Third option, the DC polarity of the socket is reversed from the polarity of modern HF transceivers. And if you believe that one, there's another one that says drawing more than 50 watts from this socket could cause the engine to overheat. All right, let's see if we got some answers on this one. W4RFJ.
NO7, I'll take a chance.
Go right ahead, George. I think the chief is all ears. Over.
Okay, so I'm hearing that we have a vehicle that is going to go motoring down the road with a auxiliary power socket, what used to be known as cigarette lighter sockets. Thankfully, or hopefully you're not smoking any more in the car. So the auxiliary power socket, you know, where you plug your picnic cooler in and things like that. And you're going to plug in a 100-watt HF transceiver into that power socket. That doesn't sound good. And that's because 100 watts is a lot of power. So an RF-shielded power cable, maybe. But I'm going to say that the socket's wiring would be inadequate for the current drawn by the transceiver. Because that transceiver, 100 watts, is going to draw some current. W4FJ, NO7O.
And 6, Victor.
Repeat that again. I didn't quite get that.
I don't know if you were talking to me. 6, Victor was checking in also.
I think George had your beat by just a second, so go ahead, NO70. Oh, I'm sorry.
I think Chief was asking me to repeat my choice of answer. I want to say that the answer is that the socket's wiring would be inadequate for the current drawn by a 100-watt HF transceiver when you're trying to plug something that's going to pull 100 watts into a car or motor vehicle's auxiliary power socket that's geared for a picnic cooler or something close to that type of current draw. That's my choice, Chief. This is NO7F.
All right. Before I give my response to that, go ahead, Captain. Did you have a comment?
Yeah, but I didn't want to get in the way of George's answer. Two things, Chief. Number one, I wanted to add that in my experience, there's something else that happens besides the wiring maybe being deficient, the wire size being deficient for the current that's being drawn. But when you pull the voltage for your transceiver off of one of these auxiliary plugs, a.k.a. cigarette lighter, I won't get into that one, George. You also very frequently will pick up alternator wine or some other noise rackets that's possibly being caused by other means, such as your car computer, etc. So I think that it's not really in the answers that they have supplied here, but that's a consideration. You need to take your wire from the transceiver and run it directly to the battery. Forget about this AKA cigarette lighter routine. Let me buy a nickel for a moment. The other thing I wanted to mention here, Chief, and it might be worthy just for you to take a moment or two to explain what center frequency is on your last question, and the fact that depending that the mode you're in, you know, upper sideband, lower sideband, double sideband, whatever, AM, CW, you have a lower sideband, meaning that from the center frequency down in frequency. And from the center frequency, you also have a excursion up in frequency. So in that last question, you were subtracting 3 kilohertz from the fundamental to come up with the right answer. I'm not sure that it's understood by everybody that's just getting into this at this point, Chief, that you go up in one direction and you go down in the other from the center. Go ahead, sir. KY6V back to W4RFJ.
Okay. Well, let me address George's answer. George, you're absolutely correct. One of the things you got to keep in mind is that depending on what mode you're doing, a 100 watt HF transceiver can draw extreme amounts of current, and the wiring that is throughout the vehicle is usually not to a standard that would handle those high currents. I mean, if you do the math, 100 watts, or if you take Watt's law, power over I times E, so if we take power and divide it by the voltage, we get a little bit over 8 amps that are being drawn from a circuit that is designed to handle about 5 to 10 amps. It can cause some problems. Let me grab a nickel. So, as Gordon had stated, the best way is to use a higher gauge wire, which would handle more current and operate cooler than the wiring that you would get through your car's cigarette lighter or auxiliary power socket, whatever you want to call it. So, with that being said, let me scroll my sheet back up here so I can get back into the context of the center frequency, as Gordon has stated, and I'll approach that for just a second. Give me a short second. W4RFJ.
This is KD0CDQ while the Chief's getting put together. I have to bail right now. I've got a 2-meter net I've got to do. So God bless everybody, and it's really been interesting. And yes, I wire all of my radio equipment straight to the battery through the firewall. I do not use any accessories that are in the car, any access that are in the car except the battery. KD0CDQ, God bless everyone. Good night for me.
Okay, Mike. Yeah, sorry to see you go. So we're going back to G4D08, and the question asks, what frequency range is occupied by a 3 kHz lower sideband signal when the displayed carrier frequency is set to 7.178? So if you were to look at, spectrum-wise, a single sideband signal, or let's just say a carrier, an AM signal that has a carrier and two sidebands, a 3 kHz AM signal would actually take up about 6 kHz because you're transmitting on both the upper sideband and the lower sideband. So if you look at that, you would be transmitting from an AM signal from 7.175 up through the center frequency, which would be 7.178, and you would be going to the top edge, which would be, I think it's 7.181. So in this case, we're only looking at the lower sideband. We're not looking at the upper sideband. We're not looking at the center carrier. But a lot of the modern radios use that center carrier frequency as your dial indicator or the display that's on the front of the radio. So we know if we have a 3 kHz signal transmitting on the lower sideband of 7.178, the lowest frequency would be 7.175. All right, did I explain that well enough there, Captain? W4RFJ.
Yeah, very, very well done. And if you still happen to be listening, Mike, thank you very much. I'll go ahead and close it out if I can stay connected here in the way that I'm set up here tonight. The only point that I was trying to emphasize here is that from center frequency, depending, and I liked you going to the AM mode where you have two sidebands. Yeah, you know, on the upper sideband, you count up in frequency, and in the lower sideband, you count down. And I think you covered that. Thanks, Chief. KY6V, over.
Sorry for the delay. I was moving my screen back up there a little bit so that I can read the next question. I guess the one thing that you got to keep in mind, if you look at the spectrum like a spectrum analyzer would look at it, you're looking at level or power level and frequency. So if we look at an AM signal, you have a carrier, which is going to be predominant or have more power going into the carrier, then the sideband, the lower sideband and the upper sideband would be smaller peaks. And what they do with single sideband, and this is the neat thing about it, is all of the energy that would have gone out the center frequency or the carrier and the upper sideband, I'm talking about lower sideband now, that gets pushed down and all that extra energy gets pushed into that single sideband or the lower sideband in this case. So if you're operating upper sideband at the dials at 7.178, you're actually going to be transmitting your signal is going to go out at 7.181, which is the upper sideband. Okay, so I'm probably beating this like a dead horse. All right, are we ready for the next question? Captain, I guess you're going to become the master of ceremonies now?
Well, long as my lifeline holds. Yeah, but it's not necessary. You know, you just go ahead and run it when you're ready for closing and that kind of stuff. Ship it downstream. Over.
Okay, good. Well, this next question is also dealing with automobile type of stuff. The next question is Golf 4 Echo 07. I say again, Golf 4 Echo 07. Which of the following may cause receive interference in a radio installed in a vehicle? Option 1, the battery charging system. Option 2, the fuel delivery system. Oh, here's another option, the vehicle control computer. And last but not least, all these choices are correct. Anybody want to take a stab at this one? This is kind of broad in spectrum here. W4RFJ. I hope everybody got the pun.
I do. Them, Charlie Bravo.
All right, George. Oh, no. Pick it up. Give us the answer.
Yeah, buddy. With this little one hanging around my neck there, I'll try to get it out. I'd have to go with all of the above, because I think I've had trouble with all of the above. KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Well, that curtain climber's just doubled or quadrupled your IQ, because you got that absolutely correct. The battery charging system, the fuel delivery system, and the vehicle control computer can all three generate interference that interferes with your radio when you're operating it. Okay, anybody have any other comments concerning this question or would like to add to the discussion? Please call W4RFJ.
Six Victor, I would just have to ask, is this question based, you're plugged into a cigarette lighter or not? And you don't have to answer that if you don't want to. Over.
No, that's a good question, Gordon. KY6D, this is W4RFJ. Actually, it can be run straight to the battery, too. But what people don't usually realize is the battery can act as a filter in most cases. But I've actually had situations where the fuel pump in the gas tank has generated enough RF energy to shut down my HF transceiver on the receive end anyway. Over.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, in some of my mobile experiences through the years, the battery itself was not a sufficient filter, even with everything running directly to it, and I found that there were some manufactured filters on the market that did a nice job. You just put it in series with a DC line for the battery, and it gave you an extra filter component. And I mean, it made things quieter than quiet. That's synonymous to freer than free. Go ahead, Chief.
Well, one thing I want to make sure that everybody understands, you bring up a good point. Not all interference is received through the power connection on the radio. Some of it's actually received by the antenna itself. And that's where I was getting all my interference from the fuel pump, was through the antenna. The fuel pump actually radiated RF energy from the wiring. And, you know, you also got to look at another point, too, when we talk about interior wiring. You know, the car's wiring, the thinner the wire, the more resistance or more attenuation in the energy that you're getting to the equipment. So, you know, you could get a pretty significant voltage drop coming through the auxiliary power plug. Okay, well, I think we beat that one up good and hard. The next questions that I have here are dealing with impedance and reactance, and I think this is an area that really does put people on the right path as far as understanding what it is. So if there are no further questions or comments, I'll move on to the next one. This is W4RFJ. Any more comments? Okay, hearing none. My next question is Golf 5 Alpha 01. Again, Golf 5 Alpha 01. What is impedance? Is it the electric charge stored by a capacitor? Is it the inverse of resistance? Is impedance the opposition of the flow of current in an AC circuit? Or lastly, is it the force of repulsion between two similar electric fields? All right, this is a good one. Anybody want to take a stab, please call W4RFJ. Okay, hearing no calls. The word impedance, it's definitely a restricting type of description. Impedance is the opposition to the flow of current in an AC circuit. A lot of times we'll hear people talk about the impedance of an antenna. The impedance of an antenna, why would we have impedance on an antenna? Can you answer that, George? NO70W4RFJ.
Well, I will take a guess at it, and this is a non-engineer's guess. We know that from earlier, RF tends to have a skin effect, and it doesn't go through the center of the coax, and doesn't always it doesn't flow through circles, as Gordon was saying, and so forth. So there's some opposition to RF. I'm trying to work through the answer to this. So perhaps give me one second. I lost the question. Okay. I'm going to say it's the opposition to the flow of current in an AC circuit, because electric charge stored by a capacitor is an electrostatic charge. The inverse of resistance is conductance, and the force of repulsion between two similar electric fields is dealing with electric fields at a smaller molecular level. So, my non-engineer's guess is going to lead me to the flow of current in an AC circuit, but I'm sure there are a lot of fallacies in my reasoning there. Help me out, please, Chief. W4FJ-NO70.
Well, sorry for putting you on the spot there, George, but basically, I was talking about an antenna having impedance. Well, why would an antenna have impedance? Is because RF energy is alternating current, just as is the energy coming out of the socket in your wall, the plug that feeds your lamp. That's alternating current, but that's at 60 hertz. And your radio's RF energy, the frequency of alternating current, is of course in the HF or the VHF or UHF range. So the impedance, or the opposition to the flow of current in an antenna, is dependent upon the frequency, which is part of the formula for impedance. And the antenna has a wire, which would be the amount of inductive reactance. And, there's another word, reactance. I think we're going to be talking about that on the next one. And then again, that antenna being having space between it and the ground has capacitance, so there's capacitive reactance. So there is a formula that determines the impedance depending on the frequency and the amount of capacitive reactance and the amount of inductive reactance. So it is, in a sense, the opposition to the flow of current in an AC circuit. And if you look at it in a DC circuit, there's no such thing as impedance. It's resistance. So it's the same thing as resistance is in a DC circuit, but you got that alternating current frequency that changes it to impedance. Anybody have any comments on G5A01? The answer was the opposition to the flow of currents in an AC circuit. Okay, let's move on to the next one. Golf 5 Alpha 02, G5A02. What is reactance? Is it the opposition to the flow of direct current caused by resistance? Or is it the opposition to the flow of alternating current caused by capacitor or inductance, or capacitance or inductance? Or is it a property of ideal resistors in AC circuits? I'm sorry, I'm chuckling here. And or last but not least, is it a large spark produced by at switch contacts when an inductor is de-energized? All right, let's take check-ins and see who's got the answer to this one. What is reactance? This is W4RFJ.
You got me laughing, Chief, KY6V.
Well, at least I'm being somewhat entertaining. At least I'm not putting me to sleep. Why is it you're laughing there, Captain?
Well, your answer, D, about producing a, you know, the spark being produced, is that similar to when your transmitter blows up because it's got too much reactance? Over.
Oh, gosh, I don't know if I would even go there, Captain. Well, let me give everybody the correct answer. Reactance is the opposition to the flow of alternating current caused by capacitance or inductance. Now, capacitance and inductance react in different ways. As a matter of fact, this may not help anybody, but it helps me. The inductive reactance and capacitive reactance are opposing forces. In other words, inductive reactance and capacitive reactance can cancel each other out. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more. If your capacitor reactance and your inductive reactance are equal, then your circuit is not going to have any reactance. It's going to be either resistance or zero. So the reactance, whether it's statically created with a capacitor or it's inductively created from the inductance of a coil, the reactance is the opposition to the flow of alternating current caused by those specific devices. Resistors do not have reactance. Okay? Resistors have resistance. Can resistance become part of the total impedance? Yes. However, I digress. Anybody want to make any more comments on reactants, please call W4RFJ. Maybe I'm not explaining it well.
No, let me add that you did an excellent job on that, Chief. Thank you, KY6V.
Well, thank you, Captain. It's kind of hard to do this without having a big whiteboard that I can draw pictures and make things even look even more confusing. But I think that a good read on, a good read, and also I would love to put together a class on just, impedance, reactance, resistance, and there's a Pythagorean's theorem makes it easy to figure out all that stuff. And, you know, you also have another issue that a lot of people don't talk about, but depending upon the reactance or the impedance of your inductive reactance and your capacitive reactance and the amount of resistance, you can actually get in touch with Eli the Iceman. If you look at the statement that I just made, Eli which is voltage leads current in an inductive reactance circuit, and or ice or current leads voltage in a capacitive reactive circuit. And you'll find that electricians use a lot of that to determine efficiency, the amount of that angle, which can be from 0 to 90 degrees. And that's as far as I'm going to go with that. And with that, I've got my last question waiting here. Unless somebody wants to talk more about impedance and reactance, please call W4RJ.
This is KD0CDQ. I am back on station. So go right ahead with your last question, and I'm standing by to do the finale and help you along with that. KD0CDQ.
All right, Mike, we'll do it to it. The last question I have is Gulf 5 Alpha 07. Gulf 5 Alpha 07. All right, here we go. What happens when the impedance of an electrical load is equal to the output impedance of a power source or RF source or AC source, assuming both impedances are resistive? Let's see. We have the source delivers minimum power to the load. The electrical load is shorted, no current can flow through the circuit, and last but not least, the source can deliver maximum power to the load. Let's give this one a good, healthy try. This is W4RFJ. Please call.
N070.
Go ahead, N070.
Well, I'm going to say that when you're dealing with output in impedance, you know, matching, that when it's matched, the source can deliver maximum power to the load. Now, the way I remember this, although it may not be entirely copacetic with electronic theory, but if you've got the ends of two different garden hoses and they're mismatched, then they're going to leak. So you're either you're going to either get loss, or it's not going to put everything through the garden hose. But everything matches up if you've got the two ends in it, and the flow can go through, and the impedance is matched. You know, like all the diameters and all that stuff is matched together. Then your garden hose is going to give you the best performance, which means you'll get more electrons through it. How's that for a real stretch of how to explain it, Chief? W4RFJ, you're a good Elmer to me, and a 7-0 over.
Well, George, that was good. I enjoyed that. I don't know. You know, when you talk about alternating current, to me, In my mind's eye, a garden hose doesn't do it. But you did that quite well, quite eloquently. The one thing that you got to keep in mind is that no matter what the output impedance and the input impedance is, we use examples of an antenna and a transmitter. Well, the transmitters and the transmitter and the antenna, most antennas work at about 50 ohms. So the closer you have the output impedance matched to the antenna's impedance, the better transfer of energy. Now, years ago, and I don't want to confuse anybody, but years ago, I remember getting to get together with a gentleman down in North Carolina, and he had a Marconi antenna, and he used a tuner, and he... I'm not sure if there's much truth in this. I don't want it to confuse anybody, but from what I understood, the impedance of the atmosphere, accepting the RF energy from the antenna, was about 300 ohms. So he would match the 300 ohms on the transmatch from 50 ohms, which is the transmitter, to 300 ohms, which is the output of the transmatch, so that he would get a maximum transfer of energy from the transmitter into the transmatch, and then from the transmatch he would get a maximum transfer of energy to the atmosphere. I just thought that was neat, the way he did that. And he did a lot of math, so I can't remember what he did with the math, but I'm not going to go there. Are there any questions, changes, and or deletions on what I've covered this evening, especially this last question? There's probably more room for discussion. Please call W4RFJ. The
6, Victor.
7-0.
Go ahead, Gordon.
Welcome back, Mike. Thank you. Chief, I've just got to ask this question. How did this friend, did you say North Carolina or South Carolina, someplace down that way? How did he calculate the impedance of the atmosphere? And then maybe I can understand what he was trying to do, which sounds a little bit like science fiction to me, Chief. Over.
Hey, the theory worked for me. And, you know, I don't know what math he did. He did a lot of math and a lot of research, and that's what he came up with. So the whole point of the matter is that when you're transmitting into a load or into an antenna or a dummy load, the closer the impedance matches, I don't even remember. Let me see. I'm trying to remember his name. His name was Edgar WA4LVB. Yeah, that's who it was. And I think he was involved with the development of the Carolina Wyndham years and years and years ago.
Oh, that's interesting on the Wyndham. Well, thank you for that. All right. I'll have to sit back and cogitate on that one, and that's a $25 word. NO70, you're up next. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Well, I know that I've given some tongue-in-cheek answers tonight because I'm sure that there are some students who have a less than technical background and are trying to make a way through the questions, and hopefully some of the thoughts might at least help them differentiate between the answers that I gave earlier, even if they're not quite electronic in analogy. However, Chief, you mentioned it earlier, but I'm going to ask your help, please. I find you to be an excellent Elmer, and I am convinced that one of the most confusing points for many beginning students is the difference between impedance and resistance. Now, I know you said it earlier, but I want to ask you to repeat that again at the end of this class tonight so that that will help a lot of students get through a stumble that can occur on the test when you're dealing with a difference between impedance and resistance. So would you review one more time just for the sake of review, please, Chief? W4FJ, NO70.
Okay. Resistance is pure. It does not react to alternating current. Whether it's DC, direct current, or alternating current, resistance is resistance. You take a resistor and you put it in an alternating current circuit, it's going to be that resistance, whatever it was designed to be, it's going to be that resistance. It will not change. However, reactance and impedance is dependent upon the frequency and the amount of inductance or capacitance to develop the impedance. So the biggest thing to keep in mind is that impedance is the opposition to current flow in an alternating current circuit, because the capacitor and the inductor react, and that reaction is determined by the frequency and the amount of inductance in Henry's for an inductor and or the amount of capacitance or farads in a capacitor. And the frequency changes, the change of the frequency will change the overall impedance. Now take a circuit that has capacitance, inductance, and resistance, they all add to that total impedance in an AC circuit. Did I explain that well enough?
Thank you, Chief. I think that was an excellent review for at the end, given how important the concept of impedance versus resistance is. Thank you, my dear Elmer. W4RFJ 70, over.
Okay. Well, you know, it goes beyond that. I mean, if you look at impedance and reactance and resistance, the fact that your capacitors and coils react to the different frequencies to change the impedance, they take these characteristics to develop filters, you know, because of that reactance to a specific frequency, and dependent upon the type of circuit that you're using, the filter tends to, you know, let certain frequencies pass because it doesn't have as much impedance to a specific frequency, or it may have a really high impedance to a frequency that would kind of attenuate it. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. It sure does, given what you were saying earlier about the resonant frequency and that affecting impedance. So, yes, NO7N. Over.
Okay, well, that's all I got, peoples. And appreciate being able to share my knowledge and bore everybody by reading test questions, and enjoyed it. So, Mike, I'll pass it over to you unless somebody else has comments or has any questions. I'll be standing by for heavy rolls.
This is KD0CDQ. I don't hear any other voices out there. Thank you so much, Chief and George, both of you. You're very informative. You give very good, complete answers. Sometimes they may not understand the full answer, but at least they've been exposed to it, and it gives them a head start. I know if they do like I do, hunt around on the Internet trying to find answers, and the pieces that you have given will help clarify what they find and helps expand their knowledge. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for letting me bail out and put a Salvation Army net out there, and also an Amber Alert. I had to put out an Amber Alert, so that was pretty busy. Well, okay, so we're getting ready for next Sunday. We're going to have Gary, KC2GA, from Syracuse, New York. And we're going to have KB9EWG, David, from La Crosse, Wisconsin. So we really get around, don't we? I'm going to let it drop. It's so good that we come from different parts of the country, and we can feel like we're just standing together. This is kind of like a sci-fi movie when I get on Echolink, because I never know who in the world I'm going to be connected to. And I've got my visions of each and every one of you, and thank you. Thank you for your instruction. Thank you for giving of your time. I don't see either Gary or David on my screen, so I don't think they're there. But if you're there, Gary or David, if you're there, come aboard now and just say hello. Over. Well, they must have been talking awful softly, or I don't think they're there. But so Sunday we'll tune in and listen to two other folks give the lessons, and it's such a pleasure to hear. What's so interesting is that we all have different ways of doing the questions and giving the answers, and it all makes sense, but we're all so different. Okay, I don't have anything else to say on this end. I only got part of that recorded when I left the first time. I cut off my recording. So next Sunday night, we'll be back here at this, and don't forget Saturday night for the RAGCHU. I'm going to be here if I can for the RAGCHU on Saturday night. So everybody, thank you so much. It's KD0CDQ. Giving it back to Gordon if you want it, or whoever wants to talk. It's open. KD0CDQ.
No, all set on this end. Thanks for being there, Mike. And thank you, Chief. Thank you, George. And good night to all, KY6-Bit.